Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by today. Shelly won't be joining us today, so which is too bad because it's always nice when we get to bounce things off of each other. So if any of my regular listeners are out there, give us a call. It's always fun to be able to banter with somebody about what we all believe in. I kind of want to, before I say anything else today, it is Bullies to Buddies Day, and we are going to talk about the workbook. But I also want to take a few minutes to remember my sister today. Today would have been her 64th birthday. She and I were about 19 months apart, and to all of you folks out there that have brothers and sisters that you're close to, losing a sibling, no matter how old you are, is probably second only to losing a child, in my opinion. However, my sister got cancer 3 times in the last 10 years. And this last time, literally speaking, she gave up. Cancer is very aggressive. Even when you do everything that the doctors tell you to do, even when you try to clean up your lifestyle, even when you try to get things on the right track, I get a picture of all of us on roads through our life, the paths we take, the roads we take. And when we're young, the choices seem abundant. And all the roads, no matter whether they're really good or really bad for us, don't seem to be real bumpy because we are young, capable, strong. So we get on some roads that lead us into a place that after a long journey is not always good for us. Of course, the trick is to know that at the time. And you can have 15 adults who have been there, done that, telling you that. You can have 50 adults who have been there, done that, telling you. But you always feel as though you're good. You can do it. You're different from everybody else. And that isn't going to happen to you. That isn't going to happen to you. You're driving your own car. Good attitude, healthy attitude in most respects, means that you're focused and you know what you're doing. Through the last, let's say, 100 years, there's been a lot of discoveries in the world of good health. We watched an old movie the other night, and there were people smoking in a courtroom, and it just like made me giggle. You know, I thought to myself, now how bad that looks now, and there was a time when that was completely acceptable. Changing your baby's diaper with a cigarette hanging out of your mouth. You watch old movies, and every old movie you watch, there is a there's a bar set up in the living room. If you were with the in crowd, that's the way it was. Beautiful crystal decanters dressed up your living room as part of your motif, filled with everything from brandy to, Jack Daniels. So all those things now we know within some kind of controlled arena, the drinking is one thing. Having a glass of brandy at the end of the day doesn't seem to be such a bad thing, or a glass of wine at the end of the day. I once had my my gynecologist that delivered three of my four children tell me that I should have a glass of red wine every night, because I was, this was with my fourth baby, and I had three other kids, all very young, and he said, you need to be able to relax at night. The baby's, you know, like, still revved because you're still going so strong. So he actually recommended a glass of red wine, as do doctors today for people who have, you know, things going on in their lives where they can't relax. They don't tell you to drink the whole bottle, but they do tell you a glass of red wine or a glass of white wine in the evening helps you relax and wind down. But things have changed a lot. So the choices we make through our lifetime, you can't change as rapidly as our discoveries change. So once you get on that road, that that path of your life, once you reach a certain age, that smooth road that you were handling without any problem gets pretty bumpy. So then you realize, you wake up one morning and you think, okay, I have to change things. This isn't working for me anymore. I see it's taking a toll on me, so I have to make some changes. Well, then very often you make those changes, but the seed has already been planted. So if I have heard this particular sentence one time, I have heard it 1,000. In counseling folks with detrimental illness, in most cases cancer, but in some cases lots of different maladies. You see all the commercials that are on TV now with people losing their limbs because they smoked all their lives, and all these horrific things that have come to light after all these years. So here's this person who says, okay, well, I'm just going to quit smoking. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to clean up my act. A couple years of no smoking and no drinking, they get cancer anyway. And that's what they say to me. I should have just kept drinking and smoking. I cleaned up my act. I did everything the doctors told me to, and now I have cancer. Well, my sister probably said that to me 12 times over the last 10 years, because she did change her life, and she did. But, you know, the seed was already planted. It is what it is, people. And if you're young and you're listening, once you make certain choices in your life and you live that way for 20, 30, sometimes 40 years, and then you decide to make the change, it's often not gonna really make a difference. And I hate to say that out loud and give that any energy, but I'm afraid that that's the truth. Now, I will say this. I've talked to a lot of people who have quit smoking after many, many years of smoking, and they go to the doctors. Their lungs sound great. Our ability to be able to get rid of some of that waste and some of the nicotine that has attached itself to the walls of our lungs and things like that apparently can clean itself up. And I certainly have watched many, many people at the Institute turn their entire lives around. I've also sat with many people as they pass through the pearly gates. I'd be lying if I didn't say that the good stories, I would say, outweigh the bad. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, if you're young, and young for me is even in your 40s, it may not seem that way to you, but it is. In the big picture, in your 40s is still young. And you still have time to make better choices, and you still have the opportunity to make the changes, that you know are going to serve you. The thing about your health is it just doesn't get bad one day and then you move on into whatever you believe the afterlife is. It's not like that. You can be sick for a very long time, and it's awful. It's really awful because you're no longer in charge of your own life. You have to depend on others to take care of you, to help you. That's, you know, is that really what you want? Make the changes now. Do the things now that will make a difference in the long run. And I would like to say it's never too late, but as I said, I've had a lot of people say those words to me. If I'd have known it wasn't going to help, why did I stop? And I was like, well, I remember saying to my own sister, I said, oh, yeah, you were having so much fun. And she looked at me real funny. We both laughed together. So, you know, the truth is still the truth. It's not taking you anywhere at this point in time if you're just throwing yourself into an arena that isn't going to serve you. So I want to remember my sister today because she had a tough last probably 15 years. And she did rise above all of it, and she did do a lot of things and changed her life and had some quality time with grandchildren and things like that. And for that, I will always be grateful. But, you know, when you lose somebody, you have an opportunity to think about a lot of things that pertain to yourself. So I guess I'm bringing this up today in case you're out there and you're in that strange place where you're wondering what's going on and how you're going to make the changes you need to make. You can do it. Make those changes and bring yourself some happiness. And we live long lives now. We live long lives. Don't put yourself in a place where it's not good to the very end. So I miss my sister, and I'm going to say happy birthday to her today. And remind all of you that life is what you make it. Try to make it a good, healthy, most importantly, happy one. So today is Bullies to Buddies Day, and we're going to go back to the workbook. And, of course, the last couple weeks, we've talked about all the bullying interventions that are out there that have been set up by the powers that be. And we've talked about the reason that they set them up, and then once they've been set up, how they affect our reality. And in a lot of cases, the idea is a good one. But once you put it into action, you realize it's really not the best thing. In essence, what Izzy Kalman believes, Bullies to Buddies director, is that we need to teach our kids to handle the sticks and stones and the names and to deal with it in a fashion that keeps them on top, not one that makes them feel like they're being abused. On the show a couple different times when we've done role-playing, and I've had some people who were bullied as young people and now who are big advocates against bullying or any kind of mistreatment to one another. They don't want to feel like they're the ones that have to be the one that kowtows to their tormentor. I don't blame them. And it's a hard, there's a very, very thin line between being submissive and taking what somebody dishes out to you like it's okay, or, you know, looking at something that somebody's handing to you and say, you know, that doesn't belong to me. I don't even know why you're saying that. And walk away. Because at the end of the day, the only one that's going to be affected by it is you. And how you deal with it is going to have a lot to do with the manifestations from those words or those actions. So Izzy tries to teach us that you have to expect that there's going to be people that don't like you or people that want to mess with you. It's the world is made up of all different kinds of people, so that's going to happen. But how you deal with it and how you handle it is what's going to make the difference to you. Not to them. This is nothing, has nothing to do with making your tormentor's life easier. because you're not fighting back. This has to do with how it purely and simply affects you. I want to read some of these ideas that are being conducted in schools so that we can actually visualize what's going on in a, in most cases, a middle school. The intervention is to have increased adult supervision in public places. The advantage is children avoid misbehaving in front of adults. And that's true. However, it doesn't really teach a child how to take care of themselves. If the babysitter that's taking care of your kid doesn't let him make his own peanut butter and jelly sandwich, he never learns how to make his own peanut butter and jelly sandwich. If you don't let him do that, he never learns how to make it. So it's the same thing with dealing with these kind of social issues. I myself believe there should always be adults present in a public place where there's lots of kids hanging out or playing together. I've always believed that. But let me say, and I think I talked about this one day on the show, I was at a local mall, and I watched all these kids playing in the mall playground. And it's pretty young kids. Let me say, probably average age is like 8 years old, 7 to 8. But there's toddlers, there's crawlers, and then, of course, there's some that are close to 10 and pretty rambunctious. And the first time I sat and watched everybody playing, I was like a nervous wreck. But as I watched everything that was going on, I saw something pretty amazing. And that was the fact that even if a big kid, ramming and racing, they tried to separate the little toddlers, and put them in a place that is just supposed to be for toddlers. There's signs all over that say, bring your toddler here, it's crawl space, it's padded floor, nothing they can get hurt on. Well, the bigger kids run into there and race through there. So I'm like a typical grandmother. I'm watching and thinking to myself, oh, my God, somebody's going to get hurt. And what I saw, going to kind of maybe surprise some of you, maybe not, but what I saw when a big kid, like, say, a 10-year-old, knocked over a 2-year-old, in almost every case, the 10-year-old turned around, picked up the little kid, said, you okay, and went taken off racing. The only time I saw the 2-year-old cry is when mom or dad came rushing over. And, of course, I realized when I watched it, well, that's typical. You know, in front of the little boy who knocked him down, he wasn't going to cry. And the other older kids would pick them up, dust them off, and take off playing. And so did the little person. You know, they watched the bigger kid take off playing again, so they took off playing again. So even though there were plenty of adults to make sure nobody had a bloody nose, nobody had a cut or couldn't walk on their ankle, which all those things happen when they fall and play and everything, the kids managed the chaos better than the adults. And I think in a playground or outside school in the morning some exceptions, that's what happens there too. And, of course, that's what we want. We want them to be able to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and start again, especially if something happens accidentally. Now, if I go back through all the stories that we've talked about this past year about the terrible things that have happened on buses, and remember, on the bus, there's a bus driver. In many cases, the bus driver doesn't intervene because they're afraid they're going to get hurt or they're afraid it's going to get bigger than what it is. I've seen videos on the news. I've seen videos people have sent me on Facebook. I've watched them on YouTube. An actual beating has taken place on school buses with a bus driver. And, of course, school bus drivers aren't asked to pass some kind of a physical fitness exam. So a lot of your bus drivers are retired folks. A lot of your bus drivers are elderly women. A lot of your bus drivers are men that have retired from a full-time job someplace and are in their 60s. So that's not appropriate either. Do I believe there should be a monitor on a school bus? I think I do. I don't think it should be there to handle every little word or altercation. But, like I just said, an adult that you know is there to make sure that you're all behaving, sometime deters any poor behavior. Not all the time. And the older the kids and the brassier the kids, the more that increases, obviously. One of the other things that he talks about is instructing kids how to identify bullies. And the advantage of that is there is none. There really is none. If you give a young person the opportunity to see if he can identify a bully, in a playground setting, say. First of all, what that does is that gives your child the opportunity to place the blame of his inability to get along with everybody on somebody else. It also teaches the kids to make some people good and some people bad. They don't have, I don't have always the intellect to do that. So to ask them to start looking to see who's being a bully in the class, I agree with Izzy, is not the right way to go. The other thing, of course, is it promotes the inability to manage poor behavior from someone else. Every time somebody gives you a dirty look, you want to walk up to them and smack them. What just happened? You became the bully. You became the bully. You became the aggressor. Not a good idea either. And, of course, it's also insulting. So if you teach your kid to ostracize who they think is a bully and they say to somebody in a playground arena, you know, leave me alone, you're a bully. Maybe nothing has really happened, but you've taught them to say that, to be that person. So now, who's being the wise guy? Your kid. Your kid. We're not always going to like the things people say to us. We're not always going to like other people's behavior that's addressed to us. That happens to me. A lot. I can be very offended by the way somebody talks to me because I choose my words very carefully, and it's important to me that I don't hurt other people's feelings. But that's me. And I learned a long time ago that those are my choices, and I don't necessarily do that for the benefit of the other people. I do that because it keeps Rini in a better place. Keeps Rini in a happier place, a more adjusted place. And that's how you want your kid. An intervention is conducting anti-bullying assemblies. And Izzy feels, and I'm afraid even though I think that there should be talk about it, having a big assembly that takes everybody away from their studies and, again, ostracizes a certain group of people and leaves it up to the ability to identify those people back to the kids is futile. It wastes the administration time. It wastes the kids' school time. And most of the kids aren't paying attention anyway. It's just an opportunity for the teachers to feel, or the administration to feel like they're doing a good thing. And I don't think that's a bad thing, that they're trying to do a good thing, but I do think it's a waste of time. I always laugh when my kids, my grandchildren, Grandma, we have to wear a pink shirt today because it's anti-bullying day. And I say, oh, okay. And I'll never forget the first time we went out shopping for a pink shirt. This lady was in the same store as we, and we were looking for pink shirts for little boys. And she says, well, it's supposed to be anti-bullying. Talk about a good way to get them bullied, sending your little boy, your 10-year-old boy, to school in a pink shirt. We both laughed about it, but it's true. So when they come home, they do this every year. When they come home, I say, well, what did everybody say about bullying today? Nothing. I said, they didn't say something over the speaker in the classroom. Today's anti-bullying day. Try to be nice to each other. Try to treat other people like you want to be treated. They didn't say anything like that? Nope. So the whole anti-bullying thing was to wear a pink shirt. Now, if somebody can explain to me how that helped anybody, I'd love to hear it. Teaching kids how to stand up to bullies. The advantage of that is sometimes it's effective. The idea of standing up to someone implies hostility, though, and it can be frightening for a victim and can escalate the situation. So, just like you, yourself, you're an adult, you're in the workplace, and you have somebody who is your peer, and they walk into your workplace or your office or your place in the assembly line or whatever kind of job you're doing, or your station in a restaurant or whatever, and they say, you know, you're not supposed to do that, and da-da-da-da, and light into you like they have the authority to say something to you. You have two choices in that scenario. You can say, oh, thanks for letting me know, and then doing whatever you want to do, or reflecting on what they've said and see if it fits the way you think you should be doing things and maybe make those changes, or stand up to them and say, who do you think you are? You can't tell me what to do. Now, which one of those scenarios serves you? Only the first two. The third one makes you as big a bully or as big an aggressive personality as they are. So, providing social skills programs to students. Well, that helps kids solve their own problems. It'll lead some children to be more considerate to others. It will stop or prevent some incidents of bullying, and it can make victims feel better. And that particular intervention is one of those that Izzy can't see where it causes any harm, and neither can I. I think social skills, I wish we spent more time on social skills than we do today. I remember when I was a little girl, Barbara, my sister that we said happy birthday to today, and I, if it was Sunday and we were at my paternal grandmother's house after church, all the rest of my cousins, and there was like, I don't know, 23 of us or something like that, there was a lot of cousins, would be, you know, running and racing and laughing and running in and out grandma's front door and into the kitchen and getting drinks of water and everything. Barbara and I, by my father's ruling, if we were dressed like ladies, we were to act like ladies. So we sat on the couch in my grandmother's living room while everybody else had a good time. And I can remember being annoyed and even hearing my grandmother, Mary Ellen Riley, say to my father, let the girls play, for Lord's sakes, Billy. They're not having any fun. And my father said, they don't have on play clothes. It's Sunday. It doesn't hurt them to act like ladies. And I don't remember being real angry about it. In some cases, I thought I was being treated special in some way. because I was all dressed up and I was sitting and acting like a lady. So it didn't really rub me the wrong way. It did Barbara a little bit because she was a little bit more energetic than I was and would have liked to run and race. But we both did it, and I don't think it was a bad lesson for both of us. Also, if an adult walked into the room when I was a young girl and I was sitting in, I was the only kid sitting down, I better be getting up by the time that person cleared the doorway. If an adult spoke to me, I better turn around and answer them, address them properly, no nas or yas or, you know, my father was very strict about some of those things. And I will tell you, I am pretty comfortable in any arena anybody puts me in. And I believe that's because he taught me how to be a lady. He taught me how to be polite. He taught me how to answer when spoken to. He taught me how to put my hand out, even though back in those days it was more a boy's job to shake hands with somebody they met. My father said it never hurts to put your hand out and say hello to somebody if you're meeting them for the first time. And I still do that today. So I think those kind of lessons, those social lessons, are very, very important. Very, very important. And what do they do for you other than have other people look at you in a better way? What do they do for you? They make you very comfortable. They make you feel as though you can deal with a room full of adults when you're a child. They make you feel as though you know what you're supposed to do. You're not standing there in the freeze or run mode, you know. I got to get out of here, all these grown-ups staring at me and everybody talking to me at once. I don't know what to say to them. It puts you in a better place. Very, very important to be trained. Not trained. Let me take that word back. Very, very important to be enlightened in the world of social behavior. Teaching conflict resolution skills. Teaches the kids to solve their own problems. It'll teach some kids, not all of them, but most of them, to be more considerate to others. And in a lot of cases, it will stop or prevent some of the bullying that goes on. So that's another very positive thing. Providing assertiveness training classes. In this workbook, Izzy has beside this particular intervention that it's beneficial if it's taught correctly. But the disadvantage is that sometimes assertiveness is expressed in a confrontational manner, and that increases hostilities. And, of course, this goes back to providing social skills. This goes back to teaching your child how to say things in a manner that is acceptable to everyone. I think I've told this story before about Barbara, my sister. She always got in trouble. She was always getting in trouble for something she said, talking back to dad, talking back to mom, talking back to grandma, somebody. And we're in bed one night, and she says to me, "How come I'm always in trouble and you never get in trouble? You can do anything." And I said, "Oh, it's not true. I can't do anything. I get in trouble, too, if I do something wrong. I just know the difference between wrong and right, and you don't." And we both laughed about that, thought that was kind of funny. And I said, "One thing, though, you say things that are mean." I said, "You should say things to yourself first, and if they hurt your feelings, you shouldn't say them to somebody else." And, oh, my God, she sat straight up in bed, and she goes, "Oh, my gosh, Rainey, do you do that every time you're going to talk?" I said, "No." And she said, "I don't have time for that." And I said, "That's why you're always in trouble, because things just fall out of your mouth and you don't have any thought about who they're going to make mad at you or sad at you or anything." So even at a very young age, I realized that it wasn't all right to hurt somebody's feelings like that, and you do have to think about how you say things to people. And I do think teaching kids to to be diplomats is very, very important. I wish some of the adults in my life had been taught that. So we also have providing character education classes. This also can be beneficial depending on the particular program and how it's taught. But it's sometimes assumed that bullies need the program and not the victims. And I think that's a real true statement. And I think your child's character has a lot to do with, first of all, how they treat others and how they deal with how others treat them. So I'm a big advocate of teaching them how to have, well, like all these last couple things we've talked about, social skills and resolution skills and providing character education classes, I think, is a big plus. I'm not sure everybody would understand how to do that. I'm not sure I understand how to, enhance somebody's character. I would actually like to see a class like that. Now that I'm thinking about it, I wouldn't mind being a part of a class like that. Teaching empathy programs, it can be beneficial, but it all depends on how it's handled. And often, again, everybody thinks that the only ones that need it are the bullies, and that's really not true. Teaching that telling is not tattling. Telling can be beneficial when a crime has been committed, to prevent a crime from being committed, or if it is for the purpose of teaching a child how not to be a victim. Telling the authorities on people is the best legal way to get them to despise you. So a lot of that has to do with how you want your child to be accepted. You know, whether or not you want to feel that that they're a tattletale, then very often that becomes their escape. They don't learn to deal with anything themselves. They also don't need to let things slip off of them because it didn't mean anything. Like the little thing that I did at the seminar I went to for the bullies to buddies. And Izzy had me be aggressive to another student. And I said, "Don't stand next to me. You smell funny. I don't like you." So she went running over to tell the teacher, and of course Izzy was the teacher, and she said, "Renee just said this about me and that about me," and Izzy handled it two different ways. One was to say, "Ah, well, I'm going to go get her and send her down to the principal's office. She's being a brat," and kind of sided with the little girl that I picked on. And after he did that enactment, he said to me, "How do you feel?" And I said, "I'm really mad at you. You were my favorite teacher, and now you're not, because you narked on me and turned me in, and, you know, just because I don't want some, I have the right to tell somebody who smells funny that they can't stand next to me." And he said, "Exactly." He said, "And probably your parents taught you that, that it's your space, and if you don't like somebody around you, you have the right to say that." And that's what some of the bullying classes would tell you. And yet I've heard this other little girl's feelings. And she said, when Izzy said, "How do you feel about what just happened?" She said, "Now every time something happens to me, I'm going to come running to you because I know those are the results I'm going to get." And we all laughed because it's true. So then he handled it a different way. He said, "Is it true? Do you smell bad?" She said, "No." She says, "No, I don't smell bad." And he said, "So you think she just said that to be mean?" And the girl said, "Yeah, I guess she did." And he said, "So don't stand next to her. Maybe the time will come that the two of you can be friends, but for right now, just, you don't believe it's true. She just said it to be mean, so just walk away from her." And the little girl said, "Okay." And he said, "You don't believe it though, right?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Then great. then we don't have a problem. So then he said to her, how do you feel about that? And she said, I feel like I handled that myself. And he said, good. And he looked at me and he said, how do you feel? And I said, I feel fine. I don't even know anything happened. I didn't get in any trouble. And she seems to be handling it very well. So what's the sense of me picking on her if, you know, I'm not going to bother her? And he said, exactly. So understand that, you know, when you say turning the other cheek and walking away and things like that, a lot of people feel even more victimized when you ask them to do that. And if somebody walks up to you and slaps you in the face, you shouldn't turn the other cheek. That's aggressive, and that's in some states and in some businesses and things like that, that's assault. So that's different. But words, or something that's just taken off the cuff to be mean, is a form of bullying, and you can't give it any energy. So, instructing students that bullying is not acceptable. And, of course, that will lead some children to be more considerate of others, and it will stop or prevent some incidents of bullying, and it can make the victims feel better. However, it can also prevent kids from learning to solve their own problems, encourages kids to blame others for their problems, teaches kids to polarize people into good versus bad, promotes intolerance of anyone who bothers them, encourages people to insult others by labeling them bullies, which is an insult, leads children to believe that they are entitled to a life in which no one upsets them, and unwittingly encourages kids to think and act like victims. So all of those things, it also implies that the bully is the problem and not the victim, which is okay, but doesn't solve the problem. Teaching students to be sensitive to victims will lead some children to be more considerate of others. But the downside of it is going to be encourages the kids to think like victims, increases likelihood that kids will be upset when they're on the receiving end of mean behavior, lots of negative repercussions, encouraging kids to stand up for victims against bullies. The good side of that is it teaches kids to stand up for those who need help. But when kids grow up, they will think it is their job to protect kids from each other, which promotes hostility between the kids. It doesn't let anybody join hands. It's anytime you allow the pitting of one against another, even if you're not in school, even if you're not in a social arena at after church play or after school play or in the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts or anything like that, you take away from the holding of hands, the making of a true group of friends. And I think that's a big mistake. I think that one of the best things you can teach your child is to be a part of the family. And if you can do that at home, I mean, every family gets mad at each other, just like you do in social atmosphere. There are days when you just don't seem to be able to say the right thing to anybody for whatever reasons. But if you're in a tight group, if you've taught your kids to surround themselves with people who are like-minded, that they enjoy doing the same things, that they actually become friends and become a group of friends, that's one of the strongest moments of their life. That's one of the times in their life when they feel that mutual love and support, which should start at home. Your family, the immediate family that you have, and all the surrounding offspring of your immediate family. It should be your first lesson in being a part of a group. It should be your first lesson and your most meaningful one. There should be nothing that tears you apart from your family. Learning to accept all families do not have all perfect members. I know that's shocking for all of us to say out loud, but it's true. However, we learn to identify and accept in a family the idiosyncrasies, the imperfection, the inability sometimes to feel like another one of your family is giving it their all. That's okay. You learn to survive in that support system. And you learn to survive very well in that kind of a support system. Some of the biggest organizations in the world. Let's look at the mafia. What's one of the biggest things about a mafia? I know everybody talks about the mafia like they're the worst thing going. And in some degree, I guess they were unlawful, took things that didn't belong to them in some cases, did bad things, but they had tremendous loyalty. And for many, many years, even today, kept them very, very strong. So if you take away the bad stuff and you're left with the loyalty and the support, you have a good family. You have a good family. And that's what it's about, and that's what your kids should be able to achieve with a group of friends. I'm not talking about gangs. I'm not talking about people who support wrongdoing, like the mafia. All I want you to see in that is how strong you get with that support and that loyalty. That's what strengthens every family. If you can teach your kids to pick and choose and come up with an outside family, that's good. That's a good thing. And in giving loyalty to friends and family, you often, in most cases, receive the same loyalty back. So teaching your children about that, in my opinion, is the greatest gift you can give to them. Understanding that we look out for one another. Punishing kids for bullying others. Punishment works when it's used in instances of harm to bodies or possessions and if it fits the crime. Again, big difference between being bullied with words and being aggressively hurt. One is a crime, may be perpetrated by a bully, but it's a crime and punishable by law, and one is just being mean, a brat, a bully, a brat, somebody who thinks it's all right to hurt other people's feelings. But if somebody puts their hands on your child and hurts your child, then that's no longer bullying. That's a crime, and they need to be dealt with. Teaching teachers more enlightened, less punitive teaching methods. And the good part of that would be getting teachers to improve their approach to children, and education is always a good idea. And there's no side effects or any negativity related with making sure that people are always taught anything that's new out there and anything that works is always a good thing. Instructing kids not to respect bullies. That's a sensitive one, and it really doesn't have anything about it that will do anything unless it stops or prevents some incidents of bullying. But on the whole, it promotes hypocrisy, self-deception, encourages disrespect of people with power, negates the true solution. Showing bullies respect makes them stop bullying. I think that we've talked about this several different times, and that is bullies, or the real persona of a bully, is somebody who's unhappy, is more than likely being bullied by someone else, is in a situation where their insecurities has manifested into a poor attitude and a big mouth. So chances are the bully needs the adult or the person in charge to pay, if not more, attention to them because of their problem, at least the same as they're going to pay to the victim. And I realize that that's a hard thing to do, because when a kid's being bad, you know, the first thing you think of is the repercussions of his poor behavior. But if you really want to analyze it, chances are that child has got bigger problems than the kid that they're picking on. Not always. We watched the bully movie. We saw the repercussions. I talked to all of you about the video that somebody sent me that just was, like, amazing for me, because it put things in really good perspective, where the young boy who's bullying, he's not being hands-on. He's not hurt. Him and his friends have not hurt this child with their hands or done anything that could harm his body to him. They just pick on him with words, harass him. And three boys who have taken their own lives visit him through the night, like the old movie with Scrooge and Christmas Past and Christmas Present and Christmas Future. And the final boy that's there in the beginning comes back at the end and says to him, he says, "I don't know why you did all this to me. We haven't hurt him. We just mess with him. It's nothing." And he said, everybody that's been here tonight took their own life because somebody else thought that what they were doing to them wasn't a big deal. It was just funny. And he said, "Well, this kid isn't going to do that. He knows we're just messing with him." And he said, "No, you're wrong. I know for a fact that tomorrow he's going to take his own life." And the little boy in the bed looks at him. He says, "No, you're crazy. That's not going to happen. He wouldn't do that because of the things we're doing to him. We're not hurting him." And he felt very strongly about what he was doing was just funny. But after he tells him that, he goes back to sleep, and the next morning he goes to school, and my adult analytical mind is thinking to myself, what's he going to say to his friends? It won't have the same effect on his friends as it did him, because he's the one who saw the ghosts. You know, I'm analyzing the whole video. And he didn't do anything. He walked in between all the boys. The kid is locked in a closet or a bathroom or something, hiding from them. And he walks through, opens the door, goes in. He comes out 2 minutes later with his arm around the kid and says, "Come on, let's go have lunch together." And that was the end of it. And I thought to myself, see, in real life, kids can handle things like that. And kids can do things like that. And there doesn't need to be all the adult analyzation. There just doesn't need to be, because they can keep things relatively simple. So I think that sending bullies to counseling all is about, you know, how they accept the counseling, what's really going to make a difference for them in regard to how they see things.
Counseling is always worthwhile if the counselor actually knows how to help the kids solve their problems. And teaching kids how not to be victims. When people know how not to be victims, no one can bully them. And that's just a true fact. I think that all the things that Izzy has shared with us in the past 6 months are beneficial for everyone. Again, when you're talking about family, when you're talking about people you work with, all of these things talk about acceptance, embracing other people's differences, understanding with a little bit of empathy to someone else's plight instead of being fearful of something, and because you're fearful of it, you ridicule it, you talk bad about it. That seems to be something else we do even as adults. Understanding. Today, I see a lot of problems with families who have an autistic child. Not an autistic child that is being managed fairly well, but an autistic child who really is really in some distress. The family, the parents, the siblings of that child often get ostracized. So everything that we learn about teaching our kids about social behavior has to do with things like that that are getting bigger and more prevalent every day. There's a commercial on television right now that said, all of her children, because they have an autistic child, don't get invited to birthday parties, don't get invited to social functions because of this one child. And the mom says, I feel like we're, lepers or something. And I understand that. And I see that around me. I see that happening. And I do see the strife, the struggle, and the challenge to fit in for some of these people. As somebody that I've watched grow up, charming, charming family, and they struggle with that. And they have to take turns who does things with their other child because it's just too stressful. So we need to get our world into a better place where that's not true of anybody. Everybody should be welcomed everywhere unless they're the bad person, and by that I mean psychologically impaired to the point where they harm others. But we need to be able to understand more about some of the afflictions that touch some of our children who grow into adults and struggle with fitting in. And teaching our kids to do that, in my opinion, is one of the best gifts that we can give them if they're going to live in this world, because we are filled with differences, and in order to fit in, we have to understand those and embrace those. So I want to say thanks. This is probably the most workbook I've gotten through without anybody else to discuss everything with me. But I guess that's a good thing. I want to thank everybody. I want to wish you all a beautiful, beautiful day. I hope if you're up north, you are safe and warm. I know that that damn snow is still falling in a lot of parts of our world. So everybody go out there and make it a great day. God bless. And come back tomorrow. We're going to have a Friendly Witch Doctor show with Monica and Shelley, and hear more about our good health using things that are in our kitchen most of the time and don't have drugs in them or anything that's going to have horrible side effects. I think tomorrow we're going to talk about our stomachs and the importance of being regular and having a good, healthy gut. Bye-bye, everybody. God bless.